Thanks for tuning in. This is episode 13 of Crosshairs Radio, and today we have Amanda Nauman. Amanda races for the SDG Muscle Monster team. She's coming off a huge weekend at the UCI C2 Ruts and Guts race in Oklahoma. Got onto the top step of the podium both days, and we definitely talk about that, but also go back to how she got into racing, you know, started as a competitive swimmer, moved on from there, her really just meteoric rise from a Cat 4 racer to being a Cat 1 and racing in UCI races. It's a pretty cool story. You know, there's definitely some down times in there as well with when things didn't go well, but she's bounced back and having an awesome year this year. Also, Amanda writes a column for In the Crosshairs that you all may have read, and if you haven't, you should check it out. It's called Pandas POV, and we have another column up that will complement this podcast, so you can go read the column and listen to the podcast all at the same time. No sponsors again, just you and me. Go to cxairs.com, check it all out. We now have links up there, not only to contact me, but also to the store. So it makes it really easy. Go to that top right-hand corner of cxairs.com. There is a link to the shop. Go buy some stuff. Still time to get it out to you before the holidays. And that's it. Let's talk to Amanda. So Amanda Nauman, how you doing?
I'm good. Thanks, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. So you are, where are you?
I am currently in Tulsa, Oklahoma, still.
Still, because you were racing this past weekend, Ruts and Guts, right?
Yes, sir.
And UCI C2 race weekend. So, what are your thoughts? Pretty happy with the results over the weekend?
Yeah, they were okay. I don't know, just standard.
Yeah. So, you had a pretty outstanding weekend and won a couple races, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that is just amazing and really stoked for you. And I want to get to all that. And I know that you've done other interviews, done a little bit of media, but I really just wanted to give people a complete picture of who Amanda is and just really start from when, you know, I know competitively when you got into competition and then when you got into riding bikes specifically.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. I think it all started when I was 6. I started swimming at a really young age, and the whole swimming background is what has led me to where I am today. I swam at a team called Mission Viejo Nadadores, which are a pretty world-renowned team if you've ever heard of swimmers and kind of, I guess, the legacy that comes with American swimming. So I had the privilege of living like 15 minutes away from that pool, and so I had been swimming there from the age of 6 all the way through college and even after college, and I guess that competitive spirit started then, because even in swimming you have like age 6 to 7, 8 to 9, 10 age groups, and so I've been swimming for a really long time. I swam in high school competitively in college, and I went to school on the East Coast at a school called Stevens Institute of Technology in Hoboken, New Jersey. And they're an NCAA Division III school. And I wanted to swim in college while also getting a good education and an engineering degree. So I decided to go across the country to swim there, get a good education. While I was there, I was starting to get a little burnt out on swimming. But luckily, there is collegiate triathlon. And a lot of my friends on the swim team had bikes. You know, they would go for rides during the summer. And I wanted to do that. I wanted to be a part of that because it was something different. So in 2008, I got my first bike. In 2009, I got my first triathlon bike. I know everybody's probably going to cringe at all this triathlon stuff, but it really was the platform that got me into everything I'm doing right now.
Oh, no, I think it's awesome, and I think it definitely is a good entrance point, and, you know, there are Sarah Trues out there racing cyclocross every once in a while, so we got some big names that do both.
Yeah, and it was a good crossover eventually when I got to cyclocross, but Yeah, so collegiate sports, I think, was a really big thing for me when I was in college. And there were, like, collegiate cycling programs. I was in the ECCC. I was, you know, doing the, I forgot what, Northeastern Collegiate Cycling Conference. So there were a lot of opportunities for me to race in college, even though, you know, it wasn't sanctioned NCAA or anything. But it really got me excited about being on a team, you know, doing something that wasn't swimming. And that actually helped my swimming for the last 3 years that I was in college, because it made me appreciate it more. You know, I didn't have to be in the pool 20 hours a week. I was in the pool 20 hours a week during the season. And then outside of the season, I was riding my bike and running and doing all this other stuff that actually made me want to get back in the pool. So it was good. And I think that saved my swimming. I ended up going to NCAAs my senior year and had, you know, my best season. And I really do attest that all to getting on the bike and doing some running and stuff that was just outside of what I had been used to for 15, 16 years.
Did doing the triathlon, doing the running, you know, and then competing on the bike, did that make competition more fun again, especially being burnt out maybe in the pool?
Yeah, I think so. It was just something different. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm still a horrendous runner, but I was, if any of my old coaches listen to this, they're probably going to laugh, because I was always the kid in the pool that wanted to do kicking sets. I was really good at underwaters. I was the type of swimmer that was not like everybody else, because I was, my engine was my legs. And for most swimmers, it's your shoulders, it's your arms, it's people with really large upper bodies, which I had, but for some reason, my technique was always in my legs. And I think that that was a big part of the reason why I just latched on to cycling so much, was because I was known for just everything coming out of my legs. I was a long distance swimmer and I just had a really good kick. So yeah, I think it was just interesting that I kind of transitioned over to cycling really well, because I knew that I had always just used my legs or relied on my legs for all my power.
How about for swimming training wise, like dry land stuff, weight room and that kind of training? Did you do a lot of that? And when you moved over to cycling, did you carry any of that over as well?
A little bit, like not in high school, but certainly in college, we had a lot of weightlifting sessions or dry land training. And I still do some of that today, but there's no like real structure routine that I have. Like I'll go in maybe once or twice a week and do some stuff, but I haven't really incorporated too much of a dry land or weightlifting program as much as I probably could or should in the future.
What do you think the biggest, both strength that you brought over from the pool, and then what was the thing, especially when you moved over just into cycling, that you felt you had to catch up the most with?
Snap, definitely. So in swimming, I was a long distance swimmer. So I swam 500, the mile was my specialty. And eventually later down the road, I started doing the 200 more and got on that 800 relay, because I started finding a little bit more snap in running and cycling. But I just have the ability to go for long distances at like a semi-decently fast pace, but I didn't have any sort of snap. So I think that's the biggest difference or the biggest hurdle that I've had to come and find, is because I've just always been such a crappy sprinter. Like in the pool, the 50 was like, the 50 time was probably my 50 split, like for every lap of the, or every 50 split for the 500, like comparatively. So yeah, that's been the biggest struggle, is trying to find that, you know, a little bit extra kick or sprint. And it's so funny because cyclocross requires so much of that. And it's been so hard for me to find it and train it, but it's been a process.
Yeah. And, but that also, so the other part of that goes into one of your other strengths on the bike. You went out, you did the Dirty Kanza, ended up winning that this year. That's definitely a different skill than cyclocross, and that's a much, much longer race.
Yeah, definitely. So this past summer, when I started focusing a little bit more on the gravel stuff, I kind of fell back in love with all the endurance stuff. And And even though it's super long, like in swimming, a 500 will take like around 5 minutes, a little more than that. And the miles, like 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes. So even though that is quote unquote long distance in swimming, it's still, you know, a relatively short time in competition compared to a cyclocross race, a 14 hour gravel race. So it's all relative. But yeah, this past summer doing all the gravel stuff has made me, I guess, start retraining that super diesel engine that I've had for so many years, because swimming was literally 20 hours a week in the pool. And I don't think I even bike that much sometimes now, but right. Yeah. So
do you think that also, like, being successful for those long types of distance, just being able to train for that long in the pool, sort of almost the monotony of it sort of carried over into these long distance races?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, I've had people tell me, like, oh, isn't it so boring, like biking for, you know, going doing a 6 hour training ride or blah blah blah. And it's like, not really. Like, swimming was probably the most boring thing you could do. You're just staring at the black line on the bottom of the pool forever. So I think that's just always been my personality, though. Like, I can put my head down and just do the work that I need to do, knowing that it's going to get me some sort of end result, however boring it is.
Did you do any road racing at any point?
Yeah, so the ECCC, the Eastern Cycling, I don't even know what the three C's are, but yeah, Collegiate Cycling Conference.
Conference, we'll call it conference, yeah.
Yeah, so I did that in 2009, 10. I had a couple friends who lived in the same dorm as me who were on the cycling team, and they knew I was a good swimmer, and they're like, hey, if you got a bike, like, forget all the triathlon stuff, just come do some road races. So I did, you know, the intro category in Collegiate Cycling, and then I moved up and started racing some other races, and it was just fun. You know, we'd wake up early on the weekends and drive out to some random place in New Jersey and get on trainers to warm up, and then I was just racing in like a group of 10 girls or so. But that was the first time that I started doing road racing, and then honestly I haven't done a road race since probably 2012 when I was in college. I would love to, but I just, you know, there are other things that I think are a little bit more fun at the moment.
How did you get then from riding on the road in college to cyclocross?
So in 2011, I graduated with my master's degree, or no, my just engineering, bachelor's of engineering and engineering management. And I had the unique opportunity to start an internship program at Felt Bicycles, which happened to only be 20 minutes from where I lived in Southern California. So for that summer, I worked with Jeff Socek, who's the head honcho and director of engineering at Felt Bicycles, worked on some stuff with him. And I told him that I was planning on going back to Stevens to finish my master's degree in systems engineering, and I only needed a year to do it. So he let me work remotely from school while I was finishing my degree. So I went back to school, finished that, and then he offered me a full-time job to come back after I finished everything at Stevens. So it was that transition period when I started working there in the summer of 2012 that everybody who worked there, you know, rode bikes of some sort. And a lot of the guys who were in the engineering department all rode mountain bikes and did this thing called cyclocross that I had never heard of before. And so I was there, started like mid-July, and obviously everybody's starting to ramping up, getting ready for cyclocross season. And I specifically remember the day that everybody was like sitting at their computers hitting refresh to try and register for Cross Vegas for the industry race. And that was like the first time that I'd ever heard of it, looked it up, tried to find out what it was. And then that slow progression, you know, in 2012, being around that was in December when I decided to do my first race.
It's amazing that Cross Vegas was the first race you had ever heard of.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but it really was because of Felt and all the guys that worked there. So yeah. I still kind of credit all that back there.
So what exactly were you... You know, how did your engineering degree translate over? What were you doing at Felt?
My title was project manager, so I was helping a lot with Jeff specifically, I guess just managing all the engineering projects. And the bike industry works very much on a timeline of, I guess, just trade shows. You know, all the releases are Interbike, Eurobike, and keeping that schedule is very difficult, I guess, when you're working overseas with a lot of vendors that are in China, Taiwan. And so that whole management aspect of making sure things were on time, getting scheduled accordingly for when we actually wanted bikes launched was a big hole that they were missing in the company. So I actually came to Felt with my resume and I said, here's all my stuff. I really want to work here. This is all the stuff that I'm good at. Please give me a job. Like, there was no job opening. And I got a call back from Jeff, and he was like, hey, one of our GMs sent me your resume, said you kind of have some skills that we're lacking here. Come in and basically, like, tell me why you should work here. So I kind of created my own job and helped out as much as I could, and, you know, stayed there during that internship and found out where they needed somebody to kind of help out full time. And yeah, so I just did a lot of managing. The way I like to explain it when I was working there was, like, all the guys in the engineering department loved what they were doing and designing bikes and literally the best stuff, at the leading edge of technology, but keeping them on track and giving them deadlines and, like, I know that you can build the fastest frame possible, but we need to make sure it gets wind tunnel tested and the first drawings get sent to the factory here and all this, because, you know, they would very easily get sidetracked playing bikes too much.
Right. Well, that's amazing. Yeah. And I think that's also probably, or not even probably, but something that has helped you now, you know, as we'll get to in your sort of the way you are molding your cyclocross campaigns on your own and figuring all that out. You really are your own project manager at this point.
Yeah, that's true. I guess all the and stuff I like.
So you were working at Felt, and you heard about Cross Vegas, saw everybody signing up for that, for the industry race. When did you actually get to a race and line up?
It was December 2012. I had a friend at the time who told me about this race that was happening in Irvine, which is the same city that Felt is in. And he said, hey, come out to the race, just watch it, you know, bring your road bike and kit, and we'll go for a ride after I race. So David Sheik invited me to come out. I went and watched the race. I watched some races, and he came up to me when I got there, and he was like, I signed you up. I brought my B bike. I'm going to slam the seat post down, and you're going to race.
So and, tricky. And,
yeah, so he forced me into it. I was kicking and screaming. I didn't want to do it. I don't like doing things outside my comfort zone, and that was very uncomfortable. So I reluctantly signed my name on the paper, said okay, and I raced the women's B category, I believe. So I got up on the line. I was last. It had been raining that day, which obviously was totally not normal for Southern California to begin with. So the course was semi-muddy. And I had a blast. It was super fun. I was just, you know, following people in the beginning, then I realized I wasn't actually going that hard. So then I started going harder, and I started catching the women in the A category, and I think that was the little spark that went off that was like, hey, I'm not bad at this, and it's fun. So yeah, that was the first race. It was a lot of fun. The cool thing was that it was right at December, like just before Christmas. So Ryan Trebone has family in Southern California, and he a lot of times comes out and does some of the races around the holidays. And he was there that day, and, you know, I had no idea who he was at the time. I just thought it was this really tall guy that was pretty fast. So I was cheering, and David was actually racing that race. And because it was muddy, he did well and was on the podium in fifth that day. And, you know, I have pictures from that day looking back on it. It was just, I was so naive, I guess, about how awesome everything was. It just came together perfectly on that day for me to look back on it now and realize, you know, Ryan was this guy that 3 months later was going to be at Worlds in Louisville, and I was going to be there cheering for him. It was just a lot of cool things that happened in that, you know, 2012, 2013 season that make me smile now.
So did you end up winning that B race?
I did. Yeah. I did. It was like, I think maybe I even won like $20. I was on the podium. It was just, nice. Yeah. Yeah. It was
probably
fun.
Like, hey, this is pretty easy. I can do this.
Yeah. Yep.
So obviously that got you excited about the sport. So how do you get from 3 years ago lining up at a B race to now where you're standing on the top step of the podium of a UCI race?
It's been quite a journey. I mean, so the rest of that season, I did a few more SoCal cross races and in a lot of different venues. And so I kind of realized that it was, I started realizing it was a much bigger sport. You know, as I did more research, friends started sending me stuff to look at, videos to watch. And so I guess into that 2013, like around February, that was when all the world stuff was happening. So David was planning on going to Worlds, and I just ended up going with him and watching. And I was walking around the Masters race because it was that, you know, weird venue off that wasn't actually at the same venue as
right,
Worlds.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So I was walking around, and I'll never forget seeing the podium. It was under this white tent, and there was a podium there, and it was like the UCI logo was all behind it and stuff. I remember telling David, like, I'm going to stand on that someday. And I told him that seriously, like I really wanted to do it. And that was the first really big event that I had ever been to besides Cross Vegas, you know, that had some sort of prestige. And I really just wanted it. And it was just such a cool event. It was super icy and all that, and cheering for it and not having any sort of pressure for me to race or anything. It was nice just to be there and enjoy the sport without any of that. But yeah, I think that was probably the moment, that and then cheering for Worlds on that Saturday.
I was gonna say, it's sort of funny that you saw that at the Masters Worlds. You were like, yeah, this is it, and it, you know,
no.
and then going the next day to the actual Worlds.
Yeah. I think I was at that point I probably didn't even know that, you know, it was just the Masters podium, whatever.
Right.
But I just saw that and I was like, you know, they really make a big deal about the podium. They make a big deal about all these categories for the Masters racers, which I really loved. And I just wanted to be a part of that. So that was kind of the other thing that sparked everything else and kind of rolled into it. So somewhere along the way, when somebody said, hey, we're going to have Masters Worlds and Real Worlds in America, we really hope that this inspires some young kids somewhere. It definitely did for me.
It's amazing. That's great.
Yeah.
All right. So Worlds in Louisville. And what was your impression of that whole event? Did you sort of take it in that was really the top of the sport, that was it?
I did. And it's funny because I just literally stumbled into being a super fan because David was such a super fan, and he, you know, we would be walking by somebody, like I was literally standing in an elevator with Niels Albert that weekend.
Nice.
We get out of the elevator and David's freaking out. He's like, that was Niels Albert. And I'm like, I don't know who that is, but that's awesome. And yeah, there are just little moments like that
yeah.
happened that just kind of made me fall in love with it. Like we were driving away from the course on Saturday and Jonathan Page was out like smashing himself on some road and we pull up next to him and he's obviously doing some sort of opener because his race was the next day. And I'm like, yeah, Jonathan Page, like just cheering it for him on the side of the car, like half my body's out the window. But yeah, I don't even know what you asked me, but I'm just recounting memories from that weekend.
No, that was pretty much it. That was a pretty amazing time in Louisville.
Yeah.
It's especially, you know, with the compressed schedule and everything else, it just got to be really crazy. But it was the racing
was
good, and yeah. So after that, you know, so that's the end of 2012. So the 13-14 season going into that, where do you go then?
So I ended up winning the NorCal versus SoCal cyclocross championships that they do that are kind of held more in the late of the season, like end of January, beginning of February. And then I won a few other races, and I just asked USA Cycling, hey, can I get my upgrade to pro so that I can race Cross Vegas? Because I wanted to go into the next season taking a big jump and just start racing elite, might as well.
So how long from Cat 4 until you were a one and getting your pro license?
I think I needed to register in like August maybe for Vegas or something. So I had started sending those emails in July because I needed to get...
I'm saying like from that first race. I mean, it's like a year, right?
No, it's less than.
Less than a year.
Yeah, so December 2012, and then I was doing Cross Vegas in September 2013.
So you first got onto a cyclocross bike, forced onto it, like 8 months before you were lining up in a pro field at Cross Vegas.
Correct.
Okay, I just wanted to make that clear. All right, continue.
So I got all the paperwork done to race my first elite race at Cross Vegas, got all that. I think I was on the last row starting at that event and super nervous at that time. I was still working for Felt and I was actually working the Interbike booth. So I had a day and a half, or no, I had more than that. I had been working outdoor demo and then I worked 2 days on the floor and then went out that afternoon to go get ready to race. And it was such a blast. Like it was more than I could have dreamed of, because the previous year I was on the other side of the line just watching it. It was fun to be there. I got too drunk. It was just fun. And then this next year I'm on the other side and I'm racing, trying not to embarrass myself. And, you know, everybody that had, that I was working with was at the event. They were cheering for me. You know, I wanted to do well, I guess just for me personally, because it's a course that has always suited me. There was a girl who lined up at that race. I am blanking on her name, Heather. She's a triathlete. She just got like third or something at Ironman Worlds. Hmm. Heather.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. But anyways, I was stoked because there was a professional triathlete in the race with me. And so I was just really excited that day. I remember chasing around Emily Katrick like in the beginning and all the way through to the finish. And it was just a really good experience, and I finished like 22nd, maybe somewhere in the 20s, which was good enough for me because I started in the 30s. And so that was kind of what kicked everything off, and that was my first elite race and the first season that I started racing elite.
What is it about that course you said that it appeals to your strength?
Just power. I mean, everybody always says it's a power course. You know, it's just it's just a true test of fitness, in my opinion. And, you know, you get off the bike a few times and there are some stairs and different obstacles, but it's just, I'm good at smashing and I need to change that sometimes and adapt for cyclocross, but I'm just good at, you know, going hard. And I think that Cross Vegas course just really suits me. But yeah, I started, so when that was September and I had been under a Carmichael Training Systems like plan and actually training and doing intervals and stuff back in April. So April, May, June, July, August. So that was like 5 months into training.
Okay.
Yeah. Like actual real structure. And I think that was the biggest difference for me that season specifically, was that I was, you know, using power, learning more about training and the types of energy systems that I needed to work for cyclocross and all that stuff. And so I think I knew that Cross Vegas was going to be good for me just based on numbers alone.
So were you working with a coach, or did you just have a canned plan that you were just going off of?
No, I was. So, I mean, it's complicated because in the beginning, David was just a friend. And then David became a boyfriend, and then David is also a coach at Carmichael Training System. So, yeah, so he's wears a lot of different hats, and one of them is coaching. So we started that in April 2013, and we kind of use it as an experiment just to see if he could, you know, coach somebody who was okay, you know, didn't have any sort of structure, and see where I could go with like actual structure and training and all that. And at the time, he actually wasn't a CTS coach. He was just somebody who had been a CTS athlete in the past. And so he kind of used me as an example to later get him a job at CTS. So.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Nice. So after Cross Vegas, you go back to Southern California, and what does the rest of that season look like? Because we're talking like two years ago.
Okay, yeah. So 2013 Cross Vegas I raced, and then I decided to try and, I guess, win the series overall for the SoCal Cross Prestige Series that year. I guess it made sense, you know, start the progression of winning things locally, regionally, however you want to call it, and then traveling a little bit along the way. So that was the goal, was to do well in the local scene, and I started doing that. I was winning the A races, making a little bit of money here and there, and traveling to some of those races. And then the team, which David runs, we decided to go to Jingle Cross because there were a couple other racers on the team that wanted to see if they could get some points at Jingle Cross. So I went there in November 2013, so that was 2 months after Cross Vegas. So I went there and was just totally thrown into something that was completely different than Cross Vegas, equally challenging, but in its own unique way. And I finished in the teens on all 3 days, and it was awesome because I didn't have any UCI points, so I was starting on the back row each of those days and just trying to move up as much as I could. And, you know, I did really well. And although I didn't get any points, it was just a huge learning experience for me. And the weekend right after that, so I came back home and it was CXLA. And at that year, it was held actually in downtown Los Angeles. And, you know, Caroline Monty was there, Nicole Duke, Katarina Nash came out and won both days. And that was awesome for me to see these women come out to my local scene for a UCI race and just dominate it. And on Sunday, I ended up finishing fifth, which was the, you know, SoCal we do top five podium. So I was on the top five podium with Duke and Monty, and that was a huge moment for me, not only because I was on that podium, but it was like I had traveled and spent all that money to go to Jingle Cross the weekend before. I didn't get any points. And then I'm at home. I literally slept in my own bed, drove an hour out to this race. And then on Sunday and Saturday, I got my first set of UCI points. So, yeah, that was kind of an eye-opening moment for me, knowing that, you know, I wasn't really up in that race like I feel like I am now, but I was dangling off a bit. It was still a fight for fifth on that Sunday race, but it was kind of a big deal for me to know that, you know, it was right there. That race that always happens at the front, like, I'm not too far off of it and I can work towards it.
But you're also starting at the back of that race. So, I mean, the people that you're racing at the end for fifth, were they in those first couple rows?
Yes.
To start?
Yeah.
So what's it like? I mean, we you know, always hear stories about the men's field and sort of that scrum at the beginning. Is the women's compatible? And how do you sort of maneuver yourself through that in those early days to have that, you know, to be able to get yourself to the front?
It's different. Like, Jingle Cross was the hardest by far, being starting at the back of that, because there's so many more technical features that get in the way immediately that spread the race out. In LA that year, it wasn't as bad, and the course was a lot more wide open, and there were big long drag strips where if you were stronger you could get by people. But I think in the men's race it's a lot different because there's just, you know, a lot of times double the amount of people that are in your way. And for me, it was a challenge for sure. You know, when I would go and get that random call up number and I was at the beginning of those random call up numbers versus the back, like, it was awesome. Like, that was a win just in itself.
So after that, you have your points and you did CXLA. Any other UCI races that season?
Nope, that was it. As soon as I had those points, that was good enough for me to go to Nationals in January 2014.
Okay, so
Boulder,
yeah. How was that? What was that experience like? Did you go up early at all to try to get acclimatized, or did you just go in and go?
We did. So the weekend just before that was the SoCal versus NorCal State Cyclocross Championships in Bakersfield, California, which is an awesome course. So I won that. We got in the car and immediately started driving towards Colorado. So I was there got there Tuesday, and then all the way up through the weekend. So I did try to make a big deal of getting there and getting the legs and the body ready at altitude for that. But I should also note that this was the season Colt McElwain was still doing Who's Number One, a lot of stuff with Behind the Barriers, and that was another thing that made me fall in love with the sport so much, was that being that in that elite category that season when Colt was still doing all the super fun stuff with, I guess, the pro fields of racing doing Who's Number One and stuff like that, was also a big motivating thing for me. Because and I still give Colt a lot of credit, because he kind of picked me as an underdog that season, and I didn't know him. He just knew this person is up and coming, I'm gonna give her a shout out here and there. And that was, like, looking back on it, it was such a big motivation for me. Like, the episode that he did right before Nationals, when he was doing his picks for how everybody was going to do, like, he literally called me out as an underdog of doing well. And I remember sitting on the couch watching it, and I was, like, I was sweating. I got really nervous. I was, like, how does he know I think I can do well? Like, I thought I was the only one that knew that I could do well. But
yeah. He was going to try to hide, and he was calling you out. But that's awesome. Yeah, that's exactly. Still, but having it on the other side of that, having to hear that must have been just, like, amazing, because you're being put up there with all the people that you were chasing and looking up to the whole year.
Yeah, yeah. So it was good, and I ended up I got 13th, so it was kind of huge for me. I dropped a chain, but I still fought my way back up, and I finished. I was just amazed that I was in the top 15 and that close to top 10, I guess, and even at altitude. And there were just so many good things that went right that day, and I was very thankful for kind of ending my first elite season at 13th at Nationals. It was awesome.
And yeah, that's incredible. And at that point, are you now on this SDG team and working for them, or is that still to come?
No, yeah, that was okay. Yeah, that was the first season on that team, so still there today and doing all that. But that was, David started that team in 2006 because he was pretty good friends with the owner of SDG Components, Tyler Anspaugh, and he wanted to have more of a presence in his local community, because the company SDG Components is in Huntington Beach, California. And so he wanted to, you know, have people that race in the area know that that's a local company, and just have a team that kind of represented that for him. So David has been running that team for Tyler for a very long time, and that was the first season that I was racing for him, and he got really excited to have a woman doing well for him, and yeah, so it was a good year.
After Nationals, where are you on the national scene at that point?
I have no idea where I was ranked. I was kind of just excited with finishing 13th at Nationals, and kind of immediately just transitioned to cross country mountain biking. So I mean, my head was still all over the place with just, you know, having a blast and racing wherever and doing whatever I wanted to. So there was no real focus yet.
Okay.
All I knew is that I had my pro card for mountain biking, and that had happened the previous summer doing some racing, so I was just immediately transitioned over to doing cross country stuff.
Okay, so you went from cyclocross, and then after getting thrown into a cyclocross race unexpectedly, then you just fell in love with the dirt and started riding mountain bikes and doing it all?
Kind of. The mountain biking thing started much younger, and that was, I still give a lot of credit to my dad for that, because he I'm sure everybody's heard of Mammoth Mountain by now. This past summer, cross country nationals for USA Cycling was at Mammoth Mountain in California. So from a very young age, my dad was always bringing me and my brother up to Mammoth during the summer to ride mountain bikes because he wanted to. So when I was younger, we'd go during the summer. And so my definition of mountain biking was getting taken up on a chairlift up to the top of the mountain and riding down.
Nice.
And I remember in college somebody saying, like, oh, mountain biking's so hard. And I told them, I was like, no, it's not. It's super easy. You just ride downhill. And because to me, that was what mountain biking was, you know, and that was why my dad liked doing it, was because you could just get to the top and go down. So unknowingly, he was honing my skills from a young age, because I was just riding downhill all the time on some bigger bikes, and it was, to me, it was just fun. So when I got to working at Felt and found out that there was, you know, cross country mountain biking and all this other stuff, then I started racing. So that summer 2012, I was riding a little bit, but not, I guess I started racing towards the end of the season. But in the summer 2014, I had my pro card. And so I started, you know, doing all those bigger races.
And how did that compare? I mean, what do you, I'm not to rank these things, but what's the difference? What do you find fun about mountain biking as compared to like cyclocross or even the gravel grinder type rides and races?
I don't know. They're just so different. Nowadays, cross-country mountain biking races are a little bit shorter, so there is a little bit more of a comparison. But I've done a couple of the marathon races that are super long, just a grind the whole time. I went to, I think it was in Idaho, was the Marathon Mountain Bike Nationals in 2014. And yeah, that was a little over a year ago. And that was just the most brutal, like, mental test ever, because it's fun and the descending's fun, but you're just on the bike for so long. And I think that summer was kind of an eye-opening for me, that I had been focusing on cyclocross so much that the training actually had to change based on, you know, these distances that I wanted to ride and do all that. So I think 2014 was a lot of like introspection on like, well, what do I really want to do? Am I good at this long stuff, or how should I focus my training on wanting to do well in cyclocross, but also dabbling in this whole mountain biking thing?
Have you figured it out by then? By the time you start cyclocross season again, is it like, okay, this is something I'm good at that maybe I can become that top level of elite racers, or is it still just, are you still just plugging along?
No, when I crossed the line in 13th in Boulder, I wanted to get top 10 the next year. So that was the moment that I knew that I wanted to focus on it, I guess. And so the whole mountain biking thing was still, I guess, just more fun. And as soon as I finished Marathon Mountain Bike Nationals in Idaho that July, I took a little bit of a break and then solely focused on doing cyclocross. So I did, I also did Crusher and the Tusher right after that.
Right,
so
yeah,
that was the first big gravel race that I did in 2014. And then I literally took a break, started focusing solely on the 14-15 season. And I came into that season with a much bigger schedule. I wanted to do some more traveling, and it was all with the focus on doing well at Nationals, because in my head, Austin was going to be a nice, hot, dry course.
Yeah, you and me
perfect
both.
For me. Yeah.
Getting, you know, there where we end up in Austin and just racing predominantly in Southern California, did you get, what was your experience with like racing in the mud and racing in other conditions? Did that still for this season, this Austin season, was that where you sort of got a lot more exposure to that?
Yes, definitely. And so I did Vegas again. I traveled to Wisconsin right after that. Then I went to do Cincy, Jingle Cross, and by November we were back at CXLA. And I remember Courtney McFadden came out to do that race last year, and somebody was interviewing her after the race, and she was saying like, oh, this is great prep for Austin because it's dusty, it's dry, it's been hot this weekend. And I'll never forget her saying that because she totally jinxed it. but yeah, so in my mind, I was getting super prepared in the SoCal races for Austin and having that as my focus.
Yeah, and this was like, I've gone to Nationals many years, and this was the first time that my wife decided that she wanted to go to Nationals too. It was in Austin, and it'd be warm. Uh-huh. So I was like, well, sweet. So we, you know, I went down there together, expected to hang out and have a great time. And then we sat inside, and it was 40 and raining the whole time. And then,
and then
we went home on Sunday.
Yep.
But, so not really about my sob story, but so how, what was that experience like for you? What's your takeaway from that Austin Nationals?
So I had, like, rewinding a little bit, the whole season was going very well until Jingle Cross and CXLA, like, end of November. I got eighth at Cross Vegas, which was huge. Like, the best result ever, one of my best ever to date. And then I went to Cincy, I did okay, and then I went to Jingle Cross, I got quite a few points, I was very happy with that, and then I got another fifth place and top 10 finish at CXLA. So leading up to that point, like, I was very excited about the season. I wanted to do so well at Nationals, and I put too much of a focus on it, I think. I had done so well in Boulder, I was doing very well with the season, and I had very high expectations for myself at Nationals, and I didn't have enough experience in the mud. I kind of, I think, mentally sort of turned it off probably after the first lap, and I ended up 34th, which was nowhere near where I wanted to be. I finished the race and tried not to cry. I went over and saw the results, and when I saw that I had finished 34th, because I had no idea where I ended up, then I started crying, and it was a very big mental hurdle for me. I guess that was earlier this year, yeah. So January 2015, I'm, like, totally over it. I didn't really want to ride my bike that much, and looking back on it, like I said, I put way too much focus on doing well in Austin, and I really wanted to kind of make a statement there. And it just didn't happen. Like, I was nobody should have even been talking about me because I finished in the 30s. And so it was very hard for me. I came back home and just kind of didn't really want to ride my bike that much. I started looking at, you know, okay, I'm going to do this gravel season now. I'm going to focus on this a little bit more. So unfortunately, Austin was just, it like really kind of turned me off from the sport a little bit. But luckily, focusing on the gravel stuff and looking at that schedule and focusing on that a bit more this summer made me fall in love with the whole racing thing again. So if it sounds weird to say it now that one result like really hurt me so much, but it did. And I think that a lot of times racers experience that, you know, when you put too much focus on one specific event, I guess. And so I did that and took a little bit of a break from focusing on, you know, doing intervals and all this stuff. And I just went to riding my bike for a really long time and getting lost and going on adventure rides. And that kind of, I guess, really saved me from getting back into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that happens a lot. And, you know, but it's a double-edged sword because I think, you know, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. But at the same time, that's sort of what drives you. And that's what makes great athletes great, is that they got you have that goal, and you know, when it doesn't work out, it's absolutely tough. You know, it's just like Powers had the same thing with Worlds in the U.S. I mean, he was all in for that, and it just sort of fell apart for him, and I think he probably had some of those same feelings. You know, I think you've bounced back okay.
Yeah, I did.
So you're sort of done with cyclocross for a while, you find these gravel races and have success in that. When is it that it starts coming back to you that, all right, you know, cyclocross season's coming up, when do you start getting excited for it again?
So I did the Rock Cobbler in February. I did the Belgian Waffle Ride in April, and I did the Chino Grinder in Arizona in May, and then it was the end of May, beginning of June, that was Dirty Kanza. So I guess, I think I was still just focused on having fun and doing all the long stuff at that point in time, but it was right after I won the Dirty Kanza that I started just sending a bunch of emails out and messages to people to get more sponsors to pay attention, because in my mind, if I had gotten 34th at Nationals, why would anybody want to sponsor me? That was literally what was going through my head. So I feel like I didn't have any ammo or anything on my resume to say, hey, I'm worth your time and your money to support me. So as soon as I did well at Dirty Kanza, it was this spotlight that kind of gave me a big platform to say, hey, look at this result. Like, I promise I'm really good. Can you please sponsor me? So I think it wasn't – like, I still really wanted to have a good season and get into cyclocross again, but it wasn't until then that I said, like, okay, well, maybe – people will believe me now that I just won Dirty Kanza. So even though it's a completely different discipline and something that, you know, 14 hours versus 45 minutes, it was very different. but it was a prestige and a result and something that people now know me for. So I was hoping that it was going to kind of give me some leverage to say, can I please travel to more races and try and do well? And that ended up happening. Like I contacted a ton of people, like over 300 emails, phone calls, and I had some people respond, some people completely ignore me, but those who did respond just, I guess, believed in me. And that was kind of everything that I needed to start putting stuff together again for the next cyclocross season.
Yeah, I don't want that to go by without people hearing that again. You contacted 300 different entities looking for sponsorship. Yeah, I mean, that's awesome, and B, that's the kind of thing that you have to do. And I don't think that people sometimes at your level who are struggling to find that sponsorship realize it. That must have been a huge time suck for you to take all the time and do all the paperwork, contact, follow up, because I mean at that point obviously you're looking at it like a job, and you want to be supported to do this stuff, and that's kind of part of being a pro racer, right? To follow those things and try to pay your way.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly. Like I feel like I could write a book on what to say, what not to say, who to contact. But yeah, when you graduate college and you're looking for a job, everybody says that looking for a job is a full-time job. And it's the same thing with racing and wanting to find sponsors and trying to sell yourself. It really did turn into kind of a full-time job of making a list of people I should contact and figuring out how to do that, who to talk to. It was a really long and arduous process, but I would say 10 to 15% was a number that I figured out later down the road was that responded or had any sort of interest in doing something. And the hardest part is that like people, nobody is just willing to like toss out money. You know, you really have to convince somebody and sell yourself on it. And I think that was the hardest part, especially with following up with people, because you'd get a response like, oh yeah, that's great. Good for you. You won that event. Cyclocross is kind of cool. Like I'm interested. Tell me more. And you tell them more, and then you wouldn't hear anything else, and then you feel like you're bothering them if you keep trying to follow up. And like, I have a very hard time asking people for money to begin with. So
I don't think you're alone. Yeah, it's the
exactly.
hardest thing, you know. And it goes back to, which I think you've done a great job of, it's not. You're not looking for handouts from people. You're not looking at charity. It's a two way street. You are racing to promote and to give visibility for them. And I think that you do a great job of that. You follow up with sponsors, you get them out there, you do, you know, you're in the media doing that kind of stuff. So it's really that full package that I think that you are a really nice template for a way to do it right, especially in this new landscape that we have where there are a lot more people at your level and that have to do it on their own. And teams, you know, big teams don't really exist anymore. They're only a handful in the US.
Yeah, it's very different because when you're somebody like me and you're doing all this stuff, I feel like if you want to support somebody like me, you support those brands that have an interest in me, you know. And it's the bigger teams, they have so much more money to travel and do all this stuff. And, you know, someone down the road buys a Cannondale and that's somehow influenced by, you know, the Cannondale Cyclocross World Team. And you can say you're riding the same bike as them. It's the same for me, just on a smaller scale, you know, smaller companies. But I just like that, you know, these brands, it's less about advertising for them and more about, I like what you're doing and I want to support you, and hopefully a few people buy some more of my products because of that.
Yeah.
And
it's goodwill and it's a good story. I mean, you're giving them a good story, and that's I think what they should. And hopefully I think the people who are smart enough to get behind you appreciate. Speaking of being a two-person outfit going around the country like you are now, what's the biggest hurdles that you all come up against setting up for a race and being prepared to race that maybe a bigger team doesn't have?
Honestly, it hasn't been too much of an issue. I mean, the biggest thing is not having a team space. A lot of times at the big races, that team, you know, expo area is a bit more expensive. And when somebody asks you to fork over a bunch of money for that, when you can just park for free in where everybody else is parking, that kind of makes things a little bit easier just to not have to pay for that spot. But I think the biggest hurdle is figuring out our schedules and who can be in the pit for me and when, depending on what races David's doing. But besides that, it's not too bad. I mean, really, it all comes down to money and where we can stay and when we can travel and do all that. But for the most part, when it actually gets to the event and that weekend, it's not too much of a struggle, and we actually have a pretty good system down. It's just everything that leads up to getting there.
Let's talk a little bit about, well, so you end the cyclocross season on a bit of a downer, not happy. You have Austins and Nationals, didn't go well. And then you start the next season and we have the World Cup for the first time in the U.S. and another sort of a trying time for you. Just, you know, walk me through again a little bit about what happened with you and your expectations and Cross Vegas.
So it was back in February earlier this year that I think they made the announcement that the World Cup was going to be in Vegas. And my immediate reaction was, that's awesome, but I think that means I can't race it. And I had done that first race, and then the previous year I got eighth, and it was like I said, my best result ever. But that, I knew that that wasn't going to matter. It was all going to come down on to UCI points and rankings and who was ranked better than the other person to get that spot to go and race the World Cup in Vegas. So I wrote an article about it that Cyclocross Magazine posted, and I was basically voicing my concerns of, like, if they're really only going to take eight and it's in the United States, like, here are the people that are probably going to go. You know, I did a whole breakdown of it because I really wanted to go. And I knew that just based on the numbers, it wasn't going to happen. So then later down the road, they made the announcement that it was going to be 16, 17 girls that were going to get selected. And I knew that I was ranked like 20, 21, somewhere just outside of that. But I still submitted the discretionary nomination form to USA Cycling to say, please consider me. I did really well last year, and I got a reply back saying, like, oh yeah, you did really well last year. We selected everybody already, but you are basically first alternate. If somebody doesn't get to go or something comes up, they deny their spot, then I will contact you. So that decision, I think, was like 3 weeks before, probably. And so at that point, I was like, well, forget it. I'm just going to put that as an event to go cheer at, you know, be there for the World Cup and have a good time. But I'm probably not going to race. And then we fast forward to the event. I get there that day. UCI releases the start list, and there's only like 15 out of the 16 or whatever it was that were originally signed up to go. So I was in that moment very upset and very pissed because something happened along the way and there was no way for them, I guess, to get in touch with me to fill that last spot at the last minute. And let's say even if I did have my bike, like, would it have even been possible? I don't know. But yeah, I was very upset that I didn't get to race that because I had come into the season knowing that I wanted to make a very good impression. This year, I had sponsors and everybody that believed in me. I was way more focused on my training than I ever had been. And so I was very frustrated, and I still am about that because I really wanted to do well. And I know that I could have on that course and it being a World Cup. But that's just how the game's played. And it when it comes down to the World Cups like that, it's literally a form. And you beg USA Cycling to let you race. And sometimes it comes down to points, but when you read into it, it's really up to them, like, however they want to pick those people who are outside of the top 50.
Yeah, absolutely. And I it was unfortunate. I think you handled it professionally, you know, and I think that will set you up well with USA Cycling in the future. But yeah, I just remember, because I had no idea, and I remember David coming up. He's like, Amanda's here. She's in the car right now and maybe there for a couple more minutes.
Yeah, I wasn't very happy, but it's okay. Like I said, everything, it kind of, allowed me to change my training because I was given more time to say, like, okay, I'm not racing there. Let's focus on, you know, the races in December. So the way that I had structured everything, it ended up being a blessing in disguise because now I'm doing well later in the season like I had originally planned to. So it's all going well.
Yeah, absolutely. So what were your goals coming into this season? Assuming you're still putting Austin behind you, looking at top 10 or what in the nationals, what are your goals? What were your goals at the beginning of the season? And, you know, what's the report card up to now?
I wanted to top three, like I wanted to get a top three on a UCI podium. So I checked that one off my list. I didn't put winning as a goal, so I'm pretty stoked about that. I want to be, by the end of the season, top 10 in the Pro CX standings. But based on points and how many races I got to, I don't know if that's just going to be possible by the numbers. But I want to be in the top 16 of the American women in the UCI rankings. That was my biggest goal because of what happened at Cross Vegas. Like, I want to be in those numbers that says to USA Cycling, like, if you pick 16 to 20 girls for whatever World Cup is in America next year, I want to be on that list. That was, I think, the biggest thing. So the whole season, instead of, you know, oh, okay, I'm going to focus on nationals and try and do well there, like, I really don't even care how I do at nationals. It's really about all the other UCI races that I've been to and all the USA Pro CX Tour races that I've been to. It's really this season just been about point accumulation. And that was the biggest thing I learned from the previous year, was like, don't focus on one event, because if you don't do well, you're mentally screwed. Instead, let's just focus on doing well compared to everybody else, because that's how this game works, and you have to just have the points to be considered to do anything bigger in the future.
And was that part of the strategy on your decision to go to Oklahoma instead of Iowa this past weekend?
Correct. Yeah. And this past weekend was unique because there were literally three different events going on the same weekend. So everybody was spread out all over. And I did Derby City Cup and Cincy and Providence, and those three weekends with the C1, like, everybody was there, right? And I would consider myself like a top 10 finisher, like spots 5 through 10 on those big event weekends, but that doesn't do me any good points wise so like, yeah, I can finish 8th on a really big day behind some of the best girls in the country, but if I'm getting 1, 2, 3, like 5 points, it's really not that good. Like, it looks great on paper, and I'm, like, just behind the best girls in the country, but fitness-wise and all of that, like, it literally doesn't matter for points. I'm still ranked 150th in the world. So this weekend, Oklahoma, the Texas races, some of the other smaller C2s I've done, that's been the biggest thing for me, is, like, just points. Focus on the points. Get the points because that's what matters.
Backing up from this past weekend, a couple weeks, you have a bad crash, hit your head, screw up your hand a little bit. How do you handle it coming back from then, especially to get to the point where you're at this weekend?
It was at the time, like, when it happened, and then the next day racing, it wasn't that big
of
a deal.
Yeah, can you just sort of walk us through again what did happen?
Yeah, so it was Saturday at Derby City, the same venue at Eva Bodman Park where Worlds was held. And if anybody's been there before, there's a really long drag strip straight away for the start. And it's really long and really flat, and you get, like, a super top speed coming into the grass at the end of it. So at the start, something happened, and somebody on my left side swung into me, and, like, I tumbled right. So I landed on my right hand, scraped the right side of my helmet. So basically, like, somersaulted diagonally right. And I went down hard. It was like 28 miles per hour, according to my Garmin, when I actually went down. And it just kind of shook me up quite a bit. I didn't think I was going to race the next day, but luckily I did. I just bandaged up my hand and I did well the next day. So I kind of salvaged the weekend, got a few points. And when I went home, my hand ended up getting infected, and it was, like, super swollen. I thought I had broken a bone or something, but it was really just that the skin had gotten infected. And so I spent the next week trying to, I guess, just recover from that. Had to take some antibiotics and just, I guess, gather myself. And so it was a little bit of a hit mentally, but like it could have been, like I said, it could have been a lot worse. So I was just thankful that I was able to get back up and training and focus on CXLA, which was going to be in 2 weeks from then. So it wasn't as big of a mental hurdle as it could have been, but I got back up, did well at CXLA. That was a good push for me. And then knew that I was going to come into these December races with hopefully some good results.
After CXLA, you travel out to Oklahoma. What are your expectations? You know, what are you thinking when you're lined up for the grid? Are you sort of figuring out who's there and how you can do? And then Saturday, how did the race play out Saturday?
It was good. I wrote about it all in my report, so everybody's gonna get the nitty gritty details. But so Saturday, I got to the venue the previous day and had ridden it, and I knew immediately that it was going to be a very good course for me. I had a couple people tell me it's a power course, you're gonna do well. So I already had that coming into it as well. And it certainly is a power course. Like compare, if I had been like Jingle Cross is very technical. It's very steep in both directions, up and down, and requires a lot of skill on top of the power. But this Oklahoma course was just power because there were three sand pits and they were massive, and uphill on Sunday, downhill sand on Saturday. So it was very different, and sand requires a lot of legs and power if you can ride through it. So I knew that Saturday was going to be very good for me because the long drag strip straightaways were slightly uphill, and I knew that I could just turn it on in a few places and hopefully try and get some gaps there. And that's what happened. I went for it on lap one, which I don't know was the best decision at the time. But I was sitting second wheel halfway through lap one, and on one of the straightaways, I was like, I'm just going to go for it. So I went as hard as I could up one of the little uphills and got about 10-second gap, and then just stretched it out to like 15 to 20 seconds by the end of the first lap and just tried to hold it there. And it was just so different from every other UCI race that I've done because I'm always chasing. I'm always just trying to get to that next person ahead of me. And this was the first time that I've ever been able to race my own race and not, I guess, just try and do somebody else's pace. Like somebody was explaining to me like, oh yeah, well at CXLA, you're basically racing like Katarina's pace. You know, you're just like trying to get that thing ahead of you that's so above and beyond where you should be racing. and it's true. And this weekend I was, you know, riding my own lines, sprinting out of corners where I knew I could. And it was just awesome to be able to do it at my own pace and as best as I could through everything without having to worry about, you know, getting that thing ahead of me that was just pushing me way beyond my limit.
Were you aware of time gaps?
Yes, because the course, I guess it was twisty enough where I could turn some corners and see where people were. I guess out of, you know, the first lap, the second lap, coming through the start finish, you can actually see everybody else coming towards the start finish when you turn around. So I could see where the race was happening behind me after every lap, and I knew that Emily was actually gaining on me for the last two laps. So Emily Katrick was behind me, and she was definitely making time and put a lot of pressure on me for those last two laps. But yeah, I just tried to keep my cool and stay focused. And had I made a mistake, she definitely would have caught up to me. So that was my biggest thing, was just minimizing mistakes.
Yeah. So after the weekend, well, one, you know, and maybe, you know, you will have your report, which I should get posted by the time that this is up there as well. So it'll be a Pando's POV day in the crosshairs. What's going through your head when they call on your name and you're getting the opportunity to go up on that podium?
I still can't believe it, honestly. Like, it's just such a big deal to win a UCI race that, like I said, it wasn't even on my list of goals this year. Not because I didn't think I could do it, but because, like, realistically, there's so much competition out there, and I just didn't know if it was going to be possible. But yeah, it was awesome. I don't know how Larry Longo got out to Oklahoma, but Oklahoma invited Larry Longo out to announce, and he's a very famous announcer from Southern California, lives in Big Bear, and he's done cyclocross mountain biking announcing forever, and he was there, and it was awesome. That was like icing on the cake for me to hear Larry announce me through the start finish and then also onto the podium. But yeah, it was good. I didn't really get like emotional or anything about it until later in the day after I got home and back and thinking about it because I won, you know, it was a big deal. And at the time it was like, yeah, I won. But like, really it didn't sink in until later about like how many points that was and how that's going to affect my rankings. And that is the biggest win for me, not necessarily crossing the line in first that day, but knowing that how much it's going to affect where I get placed now.
So you're all about the long game in this. So what do you see then as these future goals? I mean, I'm just going to go say that, well, since this was a big sandy course, you know, Coxsida and a World Cup team next year, that should be a goal.
Yeah, definitely. Like I laugh about it now, but I know for like in the future, definitely I would love to do that. And traveling to race internationally is on my list of things to do. And whether that's going to Japan, which is a race that I really want to do next year. I really wanted to do it this year, but it was just too impossible with Thanksgiving. That's something I would love to do, like not necessarily just Europe. You know, I'd love to travel anywhere and do some international stuff. So yeah, I racing in Belgium, the Netherlands, like all that would be incredible. But it's literally just getting there and getting to the point where USA Cycling is going to say, okay, we'll consider you. You know, like I need to get there first, and then I'll start dreaming super big. But
right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that you and USA Cycling will be having conversations now, because you're definitely moving up there. You should go to Tokyo Cup in this February. It's next February.
I know. I saw that. I know that a lot of people do that. It's after Worlds, I think, that everybody heads over there.
A couple weeks after Worlds. Awesome. So what's up next?
Dallas is this weekend, so I will be heading over there tomorrow. Gonna head south. And then pending results in Dallas, I will do Waco. So it's funny because I was telling somebody I was telling my mom, I was like, if I'm not feeling it, I'm not feeling good, like I'm just going to come home after Dallas because I guess there's really no point. It's right before Christmas. But now it's like the complete opposite. Like if I do really well in Dallas this weekend, I might not do Waco because just based on the points, like in only eight or however many is counted in the C2s that are your top eight results.
Yeah, you're starting to max out your C2s. That's
I know.
Impressive.
So it did. I know. It's not a bad problem to have.
Absolutely.
I'm kind of excited. So yeah, I would love to do Waco. I've heard great things about the course, but for sure Dallas. I did really well last year there. And yeah, so I'm going to do those two weekends, come back home, and then it's only like a week and a half until I head back out for Asheville and try and do well at Nationals.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to seeing you in North Carolina, and you know, good luck the rest of the way, and thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me and on Crosshairs Radio today.
You're very welcome, Bill. You know, I've always been a super fan, and this year doing all the write-ups and having that, I guess, get featured on Crosshairs has just been kind of a great platform for me, and being able to talk about all that stuff for my sponsors and just being able to reflect, I guess, on the whole journey and getting here. It's been great.
Well, it's been awesome to have it up there. And if people haven't seen it, it's Pandas POV on cxairs.com. We'll have Amanda's latest column up probably as soon as this gets out there. And then other than that, where can people get a hold of you?
Twitter is @_Amanda_Panda_, so I can keep it simple. And Instagram is @Amanda_Panda_. Yeah, those are the two main platforms. Anybody can Facebook me if they want to. It's not hard to find, and I'm open to talking to anyone.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Bill. You too.
Okay. And there you have it. That was Amanda Nauman. Pretty cool, huh? Go check her column out at In the Crosshair, cxair.com. It's Pandas POV. Also, give the shop and contact links a click. Go to iTunes, rate the podcast, review it if you feel like it, and tell your friends. And thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.